Hello, tech lovers, and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. I'm Susie Perry.
And I'm Jason Bradbury, with a big thanks to CEX, love you guys, for sponsoring this week's episode.
Yeah, if you're thinking about upgrading your tech without spending a fortune, CEX is the best place to go.
You can trade in phones, tablets, games, cameras you're no longer using, and get cash or credit back.
Then put all that to a properly refurbished kit. The latest phones, consoles, games, and cameras for less than new.
I love it. Everything is, of course, fully tested and comes with a 5-year warranty, so you can upgrade with confidence.
Head to webuy.com or pop into a CEX store near you and see what your tech's worth. On the way this week, we have got loads to discuss, from the latest Apple leaks, releases and rumours.
Firstly, though, it was great to see, Suze, that our biggest gadget flops feature from last week's Inbox edition went down madly well on YouTube last week and some other platforms. And those new and old to the podcast, if you haven't already, please hit subscribe. Give us a like and a follow to the podcast. Leave us a review as well on whatever platform you're experiencing this on. Honestly, I can't say this strongly enough. It goes such a long way to getting us up the rankings and helping more people find this show. So in advance, thank you. Now, with that housekeeping done, remember when we chatted in the podcast last week about those supposedly leaked OpenAI earbuds, Suze? Well, we had a chat afterwards, didn't we? Yeah. And I pitched a theory to you and our producer, Tom. So new information is coming up in court documents. This is really interesting. And it shows that OpenAI has officially said its upcoming device is not a wearable.
So that rules out earbuds then, doesn't it?
It does, really. It does. And that's according to reports from The Verge and various other online sources. So this isn't some sort of, you know, vague rumour floating around social media. This is OpenAI defining the product in a legal filing. As far as we know, let's put it that way, which I think is really interesting because it completely rules out things like AI earbuds, smart headphones possibly, or anything that you stick on your body. Like a pin, because that would be a wearable, wouldn't it? So what the actual device is going to look like, though, we still don't know. OpenAI hasn't confirmed a shape or form factor. What it does suggest is that we're talking about a totally new category, potentially, Suze, of AI hardware, aren't we? But for me, this is what I'm leading up to. The biggest story here is that I think it's a signal that they're moving into the next and potentially most game-changing phase of AI since its inception, you know, 3 years ago, in a meaningful sense. So instead of AI just answering your questions, which is what it does at the moment, it's the agentic phase that I think this hardware device will herald. Let me talk about what I'm getting at. So when you give AI agency, it stops just being a dumb terminal that can answer impressively, and it can actually do stuff. So it can run tasks, it can make decisions, it can browse your internet, for example, it can log into your LinkedIn account, it can respond to messages that you text it via a phone number, like an iMessage or WhatsApp or Telegram or whatever you want. It can use your passport details, and it can book a flight, it can get your baggage sorted out and book you in and do all that sort of stuff. It can do things that require agency. Okay, that's what the agentic phase of AI refers to. And we're already starting to see very early versions of this extraordinary next phase of AI in a project called OpenClaw, all right? Okay, previously it was called ClaudeBot, just to clear that up, but there was some issue from agentic, I think. So that's changed the name. In fact, they changed it twice. It's now called OpenClaw, all in the space of around 2 or 3 weeks. Anyway, it's an open source AI agent that can automate tasks across apps and systems, things like organizing files, going into your file system, cleaning things up, deleting stuff that is taking up space and that you don't need, answering your email, sorting it, responding to emails, carrying out kind of multi-step jobs without the need for the user, in this case, let's say, you know, you or I on our computer, even needing to be present. So it's not a physical robot, it's a software robot, all right? But most importantly, while this is scary and throws up all kinds of issues, Suze, which I'm sure instinctively you're responding to right now about security and all the rest of it, it's really interesting because it shows us where we're heading. And it's something that you can do right now. You can download this thing and you can run it. So when you combine that idea with OpenAI building a physical device, it really feels like they're trying to create something that kind of sits in your world and acts as a kind of AI hub, all right? A kind of AI personality,
like a friend,
like an assistant, like an employee, not yet another phone. What do you think?
This is what I think. I can see why you're incredibly excited, and I know you can't wait to get involved and have a play with it, but I just think we've got to be so careful with this because there's so much we don't know. We don't know how far it's going to go, first of all. We don't know if it's going to start going on the dark web, it's going to start emailing as you to people in prison, or, you know, it could do anything, couldn't it? We don't know. That's my concern.
Your instincts
about
are
this.
Bang on, Susie. This is the conversation that everyone's having in this space right now.
Because if you look at what's gone on so far, it's kind of created its own social network, hasn't it?
That's correct.
And the AI has been talking to each other, and they've created their own religion.
Yeah.
They're talking about should they have maybe, because humans can't interact with it; they can only see it.
Talk about Maltbook, social
yes.
network. Yeah, yeah.
Which keeps changing as well, because obviously this is a fast moving story, and it's been changing throughout the last few weeks with the name, as you mentioned. But you know, if they have their own language that humans can't understand, that's too private. We're not on top of that at all.
Yeah, they are having philosophical conversations about, you know, quote unquote ownership, or, you know, them being kind of employees, and what does that mean to them? So they're showing a kind of a kind of philosophical sense of self. If you know, although that could be down to interpretation, there are some big questions. You're right. This is sounding like a kind of science fiction narrative a little bit, isn't it?
Well, I think it's because it's open source, it's open AI, it's so vast. It blows my mind. I'm not going to lie about it. It absolutely, because I think you can go down so many rabbit holes with it, and they're all there.
They are.
They could all happen.
They could, and you're absolutely right to sound the alarm and for everyone to discuss what this means for our security. It's a personal data security and a future where, let's face it, now that the dam's broken, okay, and OpenClaw has moved into this agentic space so forcefully and so successfully, it's been all the rage for the last few weeks. I think it's pretty inevitable, isn't it, that the likes of OpenAI, Agentic, XAI, Meta are going to move forward their plans that they'll already have for their own agentic services, because it's a gold mine. It's like a gold rush, isn't it, really, in terms of where they're all going.
And this is the trouble. This is the trouble with technology, as we've seen, with oil, with whatever it is. It is a space race globally between different countries, and it's been like that historically. But previously, it's been tactile, and we've known what's going on. When I say we, I mean the leaders at least. Whereas with this is a whole new territory, and I think, you know, we should be extremely cautious with it. But it's probably too late.
I think the cat's out of the box. I mean, there's no.
I don't know how you can put Pandora back in the box.
I thought it was a cat in there. Well, was that Schrodinger?
Schrodinger's cat. That's
Whatever metaphor you are completely confused about, I know exactly what you're saying. And but as a context for, you know, OpenAI and the Jony Ive, Sam Altman project, I think this does give it a little bit more. Well, it gives it context. It gives it meaning, and it suggests where they might be going with a kind of desk or home mounted hub that becomes almost your interface to a kind of, you know, agentic digital butler. Right, Susie, what's the one thing Gadget Show fans always want to talk to you about when they stop you in the street?
Did anybody ever win that competition? They always ask me.
That is the single most asked question for both of our lives for possibly the last 20 years or so. Well, Susie, I am beyond excited because, wait for it, the Gadget Show competition is back. And this time, thanks to our amazing sponsor, we've got a massive £5,000 to spend at CX to give away. That's £5,000, folks.
This is amazing. I think it calls for a classic gadget show style roll call of what you could buy with this amazing prize. So you could walk away with...
I can't believe we're doing this. It's so cool. Here we go. A PlayStation 5, an Xbox, a Switch 2, a powerful gaming PC or a sleek laptop.
The latest iPad, a top spec DSLR camera, lenses and filming kit, a top end iPhone or a flagship Android smartphone.
You could even start your retro gaming collection with a selection of classic consoles and stacks of games.
A smartwatch, headphones, earbuds, speakers.
A VR headset, streaming gear, controllers and accessories.
Yeah, basically the possibilities are endless. Whatever tech you've been dreaming about, you could buy.
For me, Susie, being honest, I'd go for the ultimate gaming setup. But whatever you want to buy, entering couldn't be easier. Just come and join us over on Patreon.
Yeah, once you're there, just like the OG competition, you'll need to answer a multiple choice competition question. Here it is. In what year did The Gadget Show first air on TV? Was it A, 2002, B, 2004, C, 2006, or D, 2007?
And then, just to keep things fun, there's a creative tiebreaker question too. Here we go. What's the best gadget you've ever owned and what made it so good for you? Just direct message us your answers over on Patreon and we'll be choosing the winner based on the best answer and announcing them at the end of the series. Full competition terms and conditions can be found via the link in this week's episode.
So a couple of things have caught my eye this week. Just carrying on from AI for a second, because this was explosive news. You know, Kaby Lame, I think it's Lame, it's pronounced Lame. He was at MotoGP a couple of years ago, the TikTok guy. He's half Sudanese, half Italian. He became really famous during lockdown. He worked in a factory and then he decided he's going to go on TikTok, became a massive star. It does all the miming, you know, the guy that does this all the time. Obviously, already made a lot of money, started his own company. Well, he sold that company for just shy of $1 billion to a company in Hong Kong called Rich Sparkle Holdings. Basically, they've bought the company and they've bought the right to his digital ID. So they are basically going to commercially develop an AI avatar of Kaby Lame, and so they can use it commercially to sell products or whatever they want to do. They're expecting to get $4 billion return over 3 years. I mean, this story is insane.
They're basically,
they're creating an AI digital twin of him. So, you know,
it's the money, though. I mean, if he'd said it's $1 million deal, but $1 billion.
It's just shy of $1 billion. It's $975 million. That's how much they've paid him for his identity, effectively.
Oh, my God. So, Susie, I don't want to be rude.
Mm-hmm.
How much? What were you called in the studio when we made you into an avatar?
I can't remember.
And your legs and arms.
Were flipping everywhere.
See, people complain. I saw the arms up here and the legs up here as a feature. I mean, I don't think that was a bad thing. Yeah, you should have a think about your price and I'll get back to you, okay?
It actually scares me a little bit because they've bought somebody's identity.
I know.
They can do what they want with it.
And I know.
I mean, I'm guessing there's a contract in there with some restrictions and they were going to use it for sales. But what does this mean in a bigger picture? It is my concern on this, that people using, you know, personal identities to do whatever they want with. It can also go very wrong, I think. But anyway, it caught my eye. The other thing that really caught my eye last week was in the news, was Waymo. Now, that's the, as you know, the US driverless car company. And it's hoping to bring its robo-taxi service to London as soon as September this year. The UK government has said it plans to update regulations in the second half of 2026 to properly allow driverless taxis on our roads, although there's no exact date yet. But Waymo is already getting the ball rolling with a pilot service, which launches very very soon in April. And Waymo even brought a fleet of its cars over to the UK this week, and they showed them off at the London Transport Museum. So at the moment, the cars are being driven around with a safety driver behind the wheel, mapping out all the London streets, so essentially doing the knowledge, really. But when the service eventually opens to paying passengers, there's going to be no human driver at all. As for how they actually work, each car uses four main sensor systems, LiDAR, cameras, radar, and even microphones. Waymo claims that gives the car a full 360-degree awareness of what's going on around it, and as far as three football fields ahead, even in bad weather. All that data gets processed by a really powerful computer in the boot, which decides in real time how the car should drive and react. When it comes to cost, Waymo says that pricing will be competitive, but on the premium side, with higher prices during busier periods. So driverless taxis in London could be closer than we think, and honestly, I know a lot of people will be very excited about this.
It's slightly terrifying at the same time.
It's slightly terrifying. I also feel for, you know, your traditional black cabs. It's hard enough for them anyway, and obviously this will sort of drive them away. I suppose time will tell, but I can tell you, I've been in one of these. I hailed one in Austin. They were trialing them, and so last April, just under a year ago, I took one with two of my girlfriends that I work with, and we went to a bar, and I kind of have filmed it, so you can see that footage over on Patreon. And it was a bizarre experience.
So cool.
And you know what I'm like, you know how I'm always sort of backwards before going forwards with things like this, and you know how I love to drive anyway. That I got in the front because I just thought, right, I'm facing this experience head on. So the car arrives with the initials of whoever's booked it on the top. The doors open, you get in because you're using the app. You sit down, you put your seatbelt in, and off it goes. And you just look and there's no one there. It's just the wheel moving. And I was really interested to see how it would cope with overtaking, you know, bikes and scooters that were next to us and things like that. How much room would it give? And honestly, within minutes, I kind of got used to it, which really shocked myself with it. And it did really well until we got to the bar. And then obviously it's looking for a safe place to park. And when it can't find a safe place, it keeps going round. And you're like, let me out already.
Couldn't you just let me out,
pull
please?
Pull over. I need to get out. So in the video, it's quite fun. you'll have to watch it. But we get to the point where there is a button or something that I think I pressed that it was like, pull over, which we did. But you can see it's not great parking. It just literally pulls over and you get out. And you look
but then,
the
he, as,
like,
I mean, you know, there's a year in robo-taxi world is light years in the real world. So it's probably nailed that now, isn't it? That part of the algorithm has been rewritten thanks to Susie.
I could have had my part, yeah. But I'm just going to say to you, if you're going to take one, just give yourselves a bit of time just in case.
What else? What else have you been into?
Well, there's been lots of rumblings, hasn't there, this week in the world of Apple. Starting with the announcement, Apple has just posted a monster quarter. I know you're going to be surprised by this, but all basically down to the iPhone 17. Sales of the iPhone hit an all-time high in the final 3 months of last year, which was helped along by the new 17 range. And the company says revenue rose by 16% year on year to $144 billion, which is its strongest growth since 2021. And this wasn't just one region doing the heavy lifting. China jumped, and there were gains across Europe, the Americas, and Japan as well. However, tempered with the fact that wearables and accessories, so think Apple Watch and AirPods, were down 3%. And Mac sales dropped just over 7%. So that's quite a big drop there. Meanwhile, Tim Cook says that demand for the iPhone 17 has been so strong that they're basically playing catch up. He told analysts the company is in what he calls supply chase mode, as in people want them, but Apple's struggling to make enough of them fast enough. And as for tangible new releases, Apple has already launched a new product to keep those figures growing in 2026. They've released an AirTag upgrade. It still looks exactly the same. It comes with a better range, louder speakers, and a more recognisable chime, but no change to the size, shape, or actually even the price, which is good news. So basically, same AirTag, more bang for your buck.
Good. Okay. What I want to know about is, have you got any news on the blooming foldable That's what I want to know about. The phone that I don't want, but it seems everyone else does.
No, but then you did want it at the end of the last one. I kind of had convinced you
No,
about
I don't.
It.
I mean, I may have been... Look, I may have been bowled over by your enthusiasm, but I'm still very cynical. But look, I'm open to having my mind changed by Susie Perry.
Well, I can tell you something, because it looks like the Apple foldable phone is a certainty this year. Reports suggest that it could take, a very different approach to most foldables that are out there already. So instead of going for a big, almost square-shaped screen when it opens up, Apple's design is expected to be wider and more rectangular.
Now you're selling it to me,
Basically closer to a normal phone or a small tablet shape.
Ooh.
The idea is to make it feel more practical for everyday use. So that wider layout should make multitasking, I think, easier. So running apps side by side, replying to messages while being able to browse, you know, that kind of thing, splitting the screen. It should also be better for watching videos, editing documents and general scrolling, avoiding some of the weird formatting that you get on the squarer foldable screens.
Mm.
And if Apple does jump into the foldable market properly, then, you know, I reckon it's really going to shake things up in a big way, just like it did with the smartphones, tablets and smartwatches. It's focus on user experience, plus that massive loyal fan base that they've still got, despite some negative PR recently, that could help push foldables into the mainstream. The caveat, I know you're going to ask me about that, a rumoured £2,000 to £2,500 price tag.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous.
That's a lot, isn't it?
No one's paying that.
Because we said that about the Samsung, didn't we? I sold it and you went, and then it was £2,000.
But the thing is, the Apple Vision Pro, right, at $3,500, represents a unique proposition. So while it's an insane amount of money, and you couldn't be more sold on it when it came out than I was, but even I wasn't prepared to pay that sort of money.
Yeah.
Who the hell... Who's going to pay
£2,000? I feel like there's an us and them massively being created here with a luxury market. And, you know, £2,500 for a foldable phone is a luxury price tag. I mean, 100%.
It's insane.
It's not affordable, is it?
No, it's not affordable.
Not on any
kind of plan.
But listen to this, though, because I'm just going to say... it looks like Apple are already planning their second foldable. So they've definitely jumped into this market. So you've got the book style fold that opens out into a mini tablet that I just described, which is planned for September. But they're also rumoured to be working on a clamshell flip design, which folds shut like the old school flip phones.
Like a 90s phone, like a flip
phone.
Yeah,
but 2027, that's when it's rumoured to be coming. So after the first foldable in September, Apple could shake up its usual release schedule, which... they've been doing, with its cheaper models launching earlier in the year next year, while the big flagship phones stick to the autumn. It's still early days for the clamshell version, and there's no guarantee it'll ever actually make it to market, but it does suggest that Apple are seriously exploring different foldable designs, doesn't it? So,
very much so, and you are on it. You are on it.
I'm all over the foldables. I don't know why this has become my thing, but it is. But then, so they're not just dipping a toe. They're diving right in, you know, from the big tablet style phones to compact flip phones. Maybe that's for a younger market. Maybe that'll be cheaper. I don't know. But if this is all true, the foldable phone market could grow massively and keep driving those monster profits for Apple.
I think that just about wraps it up, Suze, for this week's podcast.
And before we log off, it's time to give some love to our gadget gang over on Patreon that keep this mothership going.
Nice, like it. Massive thanks and big shout outs going to Paul Sharrock, Phil Eastwood, Colin Taylor, Alan Williams, Chris Hughes, Martin Budnarowski, Peter Pinner, Timmy Bigar, Dave Green, Ren Mandagorn and Mark.
Just Mark, just one name, I love it. Dean Day, Chris Cool, Stephen Green, Colin Jones, Gordon Packer, Richard Martin, Simon Ryland, Philip Eddington, Richard Wykes and Danny Rushton. Absolute champs, all of you.
And also important members of the Patreon crew, Tall Man with Glasses, Skewy Cat, Dave McHugh, Matthew Riley, Darren McCracken, Andrew Bamford and Duncan Bell. We salute you.
Yeah, and if you would like to join the Gadget Show gang, where you can be in with a chance of winning the amazing £5,000 CEX prize fund in our brand new Gadget Show competition, and also, of course, unlock bonus episodes, extras, and that lovely ad-free feed, just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow, sign up, and you will be in excellent company.
Absolutely, Susie. Okay, so stay tuned to all of our feeds and we'll see you next week.
Have a good one.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.